This is Karen Lyle of Salesport Talk, and I invite you to listen into a conversation I had with Sir Robin Knox Johnson about the weather encountered at sea by racers in a round-the-world clipper race.
If you go down the South Atlantic and you're getting down towards Uruguay and Argentina, indeed, you get quite a lot of squalls, and they're nasty, and they're renowned amongst seamen because they come up with very little warning and they hit you very hard. And everyone thinks, you know, oh, well, sailing down there is nice and easy. No, it isn't. It can be really, really difficult. And you've got to be totally alert. And the whole secret is, when you see a potential thing coming in, get your sails down fast, because otherwise the wind is going to blow you on your side.
Yesterday we were sailing along, 24 hours out, and we're finishing the race. Come across a few occluded fronts, as they call them in the local area, cigar fronts. We experienced between 60 to 80 knot squalls coming through. One final test after 5,000 miles, an incident with not being able to release our tack line in time, which resulted in, can I put this nicely, the explosion of our code 2 kite. Good effort from everybody to get it down. What can I say about the weather? Lightning pretty much throughout the entire evening, and fork lightning all throughout the sky for 12 hours or so.
What you've got to realize is those crews are amateurs. They've had a 4 weeks training, and by this time they've sailed about 5,000 miles, so they're not exactly amateurs. But nevertheless, for them, exploring the different areas of the ocean and the different weather systems you can get is still something they've got to learn about. And coming down that coast can be difficult. And people think, you know, it's a piece of cake. No, it isn't. The sea never lets you off. You've got to be alert the whole time. We always used to say, you know, the whole thing about a seaman is he's alert. And you've got to be alert, because those systems come through and they can knock the boat on its side. You know, suddenly people who've never been out of their drawing room, finding their whole world's turned 90 degrees. And yet they come out of it and they survive it and they come out of it. And when I went and met them in Uruguay in Punta del Este, when they finished, you could see the pride they got, because they'd been through something really difficult and they come out of it. And I thought, bless you, you're now learning and you've every reason to be proud of yourselves.
To see the video of that boat in the thunderstorm, go to SailSportTalk.com and click on Round the World Clipper Race Uruguay.
All right, thank you for that, Crisscross. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, border to border, around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. Tuesdays at 9:40, we always do a little segment with Karen Lyle, who will co-host with me from SailSportTalk.com. That's two T's in a row, SailSportTalk.com. We have a guest in studio as well. But first of all, Karen, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's really good to see you in person today. I was just down in L.A., as you know, and so back again.
You were down
on
in
the
LA?
Water. Yes. Uh-huh. We'll be hearing more about that next week.
In studio with us is Jim Quancy. He is the Commodore of the Pacific Cup Yacht Club. He also is Commodore of the Single-Handed Sailing Society. Jim, welcome in. For neophytes, single-handed, double-handed, we're talking about solo and two people. Is that it?
That's it, Rick. Yeah. So I've been fortunate to have the time and to have a job and to meet the right people, single-handed a few times, double-handed two people a few times, and then crewed boats with four people, six people, eight people, 14 people on a big boat. Yeah.
So Jim, you're also the Commodore this year for the Pacific Cup Yacht Club that handles the race from San Francisco to Hawaii. And can you tell us a little bit about what that event is like when people arrive?
Sure. So for starters, the Pacific Cup happens every 2 years on even number of years. Leaves right here in San Francisco, starts out right under the gate, and then you turn left, and it finishes right off Kaneohe, which is on the windward side of Oahu. Mm. And I'll tell you, a lot of people go to Oahu, they never see the windward side. The windward side's a bit wet, a bit windier. It's green. It's lush. No hotels, which is why not many people go there. But it's like you think of a tropical island, right? Mm. Green, lush. There's a beautiful bay there. But, you know, it's a thing of beauty when you pull in. And you pull your boat up right to the bulkhead, and it's about 20 feet from the pool, and it's about 50 feet from the lanai and the bar, and it's just a great place to finish a race.
Very cool. So can you tell us about some of the challenges and maybe times of peril that you had in that journey or others?
Yeah. The thing when you – sailing out in the ocean off San Francisco can be rough. And, you know, we've had people, you know, die out here. So the thing when you start the Pacific Cup, the first 2 days can be quite rough. It wouldn't be unusual to have 20, 25, 30 knots of wind. Mm. In an 8 or 10-foot sea, it's just kind of another day. And it could be 15-foot seas. So the first couple days are hard. And depending on how big a boat you're on and how the crew is and wouldn't be unusual for most of the crew to be seasick. So you're trying to manage the boat in a lot of wind and big waves and green water over the decks. As you find your way to the, you know, day three or four or five where you get out of that and the spinnakers go up and it's downwind sailing and it couldn't be more beautiful.
Hmm. You said that you had double-handed with your wife on this race once. Tell us a little bit about what that's like. I guess she's the member of the St. Francis Yacht Club and you're the Commodore for the Pacific Yacht Club. How did you manage that that partnership?
Yeah. So one thing, my wife and I met sitting on the rail doing ocean races. So we've been sailors for a very long time. My wife's done 9 of these Hawaii races. Hmm. And the last one was the double-handed one, which I joke was kind of the riskiest. 24 hours a day for 2 weeks with your spouse, going on and off, and you're racing. So, you know, sleep deprived, food's not so good. So you can imagine it can be a bit stressful, especially later in the race when you get squalls come through and the wind goes up to 25, 30, 35 knots with a spinnaker up, which is that big round sail at the front of the boat. Can be pretty scary stuff in the middle of the night. But we had a great time. You know, you kind of set up a rhythm. You know, she decided she was going to do days and I was going to do nights. I had to be the vampire thing. I love the night. It's about the sky, the moon, the pitch black nights are better yet, the Milky Way. It's beautiful. And then those doses of adrenaline when a squall comes through. And the last 3 days into Hawaii is kind of squall alley. And at some point, it's going to be a handful.
Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle with the Nocturnal, Jim Kwansi. So when you're out there in the middle of the ocean, do you try to stay near shipping lanes in case you need help? And what would be the scenario in the middle of it? Like, you're right in between San Francisco and Hawaii. How fast could the Coast Guard get out to you? Would it take days?
Yeah. So, Rick, this is a race. So it's not about shipping lanes. It's all about the wind and the waves and how do I get to Hawaii fastest. You spend a lot of time looking at the weather. Where's the high pressure region? Where's the most wind? Where's there's no wind? Mm. A lot of strategy involved. How far? When do you turn right after running south? Because if you turn right too soon, you could be stuck in no wind. Turn right too late, you did too many miles, and you're going to lose. So you kind of have to get that sorted. And you're watching the competitors, which you may only know where they are once a day. There's a lot of variables going on. And it's like a lot of sports. Once you dig deep, there's a lot of complexity.
Hmm. Can you give us one of those nuances of the complexity?
Yeah, so it's over 2,000 miles to Hawaii. If you're too far north or south by maybe 10 miles, and on a chart of the ocean, that's like a pencil width. Mm-hmm. You lose. You end up in less wind than somebody else, and they go right by you.
You're at Pitcairn Island, and you got to burn the boat.
You know, other things you have to think about is, again, I mentioned squalls. You know, you're flying a spinnaker double-handed, so you're alone because the other person's sleeping, and the wind goes to 30 or 35 knots. Do you take the chute down? Can you take the chute down in that kind of wind at 4 a.m. in the morning in the pitch black? And everybody who goes to Hawaii, at some point, you're going to be in that situation.
Well, I would think that there might be occasions in which the spinnaker might shred because it's a light sail. And how are you handling that? Are you using autopilot and then holding, then flying the kite, or how do you do that as one person?
When single-handed alone, or whether double-handed, two people with the other person sleeping almost all the
time. Right,
which
is single-handed basically.
Yeah, you're using an autopilot all the time because, again, strategy thing. If you're steering the boat's going to be slow because nobody's trimming the sails. Nobody's making the boat go fast. So you want the autopilot to drive. And to drive well, and there's all kinds of tweaking on the autopilot to get it to do what it needs to do through the waves.
Well, I'm wondering, I mean, because I've certainly flown a spinnaker, and I know that the wind shifts. So on this route, is it just very consistent? So, I mean, I'm imagining single-handing, so handling the sheets, because that's not automated, right?
Right.
And so you're handling the sheets, you're flying the kite, basically. So what happens? Do you get wind shifts, and how do you handle that when you're single-handing that?
Karen, you absolutely do. Depending on your instrumentation, you can actually have your wind direction instruments hooked in your autopilot, so it keeps a constant angle to the wind. But none of this stuff's perfect. And the first time you go to sleep with the spinnaker up,
I can imagine.
In 25 knots of wind, it's a little, how's this going to go? Mm-hmm. But, you know, humans, you get used to it. It's okay. You know, yeah, you can go to sleep in 25 knots with the chute up. The other part of that on the single-handed when you're by yourself is, you know, you probably only sleep an hour at a time. And you got to get up, check the boat out, make sure things are right, go back to bed.
It's never a deep sleep.
It's funny. Again, another one of these technical things you get into. Go into REM sleep. I think it's about 20 minutes for a cycle. Mm-hmm. So really, if you can deeply fall asleep fast, half-hour clips work.
Right.
Everybody's different. I'm a one-hour kind of person. Some people are two-hour people. You talk about the Frenchmen who go around the world alone, they're mostly half-hour.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit more about the autopilot? Because to me, that's just tying a mop to the helm. So what is there a computer that's adjusting like every minute? Is it all GPS driven?
It's not GPS driven, but it's absolutely computer driven. Yeah, yeah. So it knows. It's got a electronic compass, so it knows the direction it's going in. Again, you may have it hooked up to the wind instruments, so it knows the wind direction. I've been doing this about 30 years. 30 years ago, the autopilots were pretty crude. Now they're pretty damn good. Yeah.
Do you feel like you're cheating? Are you going to be Captain Bly in a launch, or is that just everyone using it?
You know, it's funny. You need to do well in these shorthanded races, you know, one person or two people, you need to be a little bit of a systems engineer.
Mm.
It's about keeping everything running.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and also there's just some skill and talent to managing how all those things work. I mean, I remember one of the first boats that I sailed on was a Nauticat 50 that had all the instrumentation, and they could predict, like, if they were going to Hawaii, when they would arrive based on the wind speeds and other things because that instrumentation was so clever. But, you know, you can't always rely on it. Things happen. Like, the engines are not always aligned exactly. The GPS is not always accurate. You know, sometimes the wind meters are not accurate. Sometimes a bird sat on something, you know, and caused a problem. So, you have to do systems engineering. Now, I'm curious, did you ever have a time where your spinnaker shredded because of wind, or you lost it, or you had instrumentation that failed at a very critical moment?
I've done 19 of these Hawaii races. So
wow.
yes, and yes. And it's like, which one?
Give us a story.
Yeah, like my wife will tell you about, you know, squalls generally last about 45 minutes or an hour. So, and they, 25 knots, 30 knots, hopefully not 35, but sometimes it happens. And you can kind of gut it out, take the wheel, because somewhere near 30 knots, the autopilot's not going to work well. And we had one of those squalls come through, and it's like, okay, you know, grab the wheel. It was pushing 30 knots. The autopilot was, we were going to crash. And I thought, well, just gut it out for 45 minutes or an hour. And then it was an hour, and it's still blowing, 30-ish, 32-ish, 34-ish. And then it was 2 hours, and then it was 3 hours. Mm. And it turned out it wasn't a squall. It was a front. So weather's really important. This front came through, and it turned into 5 hours of this low 30-knot stuff. And about 3 hours in, you know, my wife and I were looking at each other, and it's like, we need to take the chute down. And I'm like, well, honey, how about I hand you the wheel, and I'll go to the front of the boat to take the chute down. And she's like, I can't drive in 32 knots of wind and big seas. That, like, that's not going to work. And I said, well, we're not going to put you on the foredeck to pull down this huge sail. That's not going to work. So we're just going to keep going. And, you know, I don't know what's going on. This should have ended an hour ago. This went on for 5 hours.
Is that when you get to the point, like, when this storm ends, I'm never sailing again?
No, but it was, shoot, blow up. I want you to blow up. Because if you blow up, we can kind of get off this train. And it didn't blow up. And I have an old, heavy boat. It's a 50-year-old boat. You know?
We're out of time, but I want to thank Jim Quancy for coming in, Commodore of the Pacific Cup Yacht Club, and also for the Single-Handed Sailing Society. Thanks for your stories and info. It's really cool.
Thank you, Rick.
Really nice to have you.
Karen, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Rick.
And we'll do it next time, next Tuesday. We'll take a quick break, and we will come on back on Sports Byline.